This program is a paid commercial announcement and in no way represents the views of WPHT or its management.
Now on Talk Radio 1210, WPHT, WPHT, HD, WOGL, HD3, Philadelphia.
Saturday Night Live with Philly Labor.
If we don't move in our own direction, we're going to become extinct. In fact, in some cases, we're close to being extinct right now.
Presented by the law offices of Pond, Lehocky, Stern, Giordano. Talk, listen, and speak to the region's most influential leaders. It's Saturday Night Live with Philly Labor.
Man, a good Saturday night, everyone, and welcome in to Saturday Night Live with Philly Labor as we come to you here on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT, and as we come to the close of the first full week of 2019, I think it's still appropriate to say Happy New Year to the Delaware Valley and certainly everyone throughout the labor community who had such a spectacular 2018, and 2019 certainly looks to be a very good year in front of us. Along with Jay Dock and Chris Woods, I'm Joe Krause. We're joined in studio with a couple of special guests. We'll introduce you to our special guest as the show rolls on here through the top of the hour. But we welcome back Chris Woods, who was doing a lot of traveling towards the tail end of 2018. So when you're traveling, my friend, I guess that means all good because work's getting done and you're moving around the country.
Thank you, man. I'm glad to be back. I missed you guys.
We missed you too, buddy.
Happy New Year's to all of our listeners. Glad to be back. And so I look forward to us having an exciting year. And putting some really good programs out there.
No doubt about that. We've got a great lineup here in the opening 12 weeks of 2019. We're presented by Pond, Lehocky, Stern, and Giordano. We are powered by our good friends at the Sonesta Hotel, where every 6 weeks during 2019, Jay Doc will return with our labor leader roundtables. And of course, we're fueled by our friends at Chapman Ford, specifically Jim Stevenson, a man who has just clicked over another calendar year, now 34 years, J-Doc, of unconditional support to the labor community. We welcome Jim back in to another season.
Yeah, no, absolutely. There's a lot of our labor community that Jim takes care of, and certainly we appreciate his support.
We got a great show lined up for you. Before we bring in our first guest to join us here in the opening block, I want to set the stage or set the table with this short audio clip. Glenn?
I'm quoting you. I just want to check that the shutdown could go on for months or even a year or longer. Did you say that?
And I did.
I did. Is that
border
your assessment of where we are?
That. Absolutely, I said that.
That's Donald Trump commenting on the shutdown. Our special guest is Philip Glover, who's going to join us and give us his immediate reaction to that from the American Federation of Government Employees, District 3, National Vice President, right from the top. We welcome in Phil Glover to Saturday Night Live with Philly Labor. Phil, a good Saturday night, sir.
Well, thank you for having me on. Appreciate it.
So, Phil, obviously this is a trying time, a lot going on. What's the status from your point of view of the government shutdown?
Well, we're at a real stalemate here. It's a little different than prior years because you have this change of leadership happening at the same time that federal employees won't be getting paid. Essentially, this next paycheck is January 11th. They will not get that check because we've been shut down for over 3 weeks. So the last appropriations day that was available was December 21st. So they got paid for that up to that day in their last check. And then now what's going to happen is January 11th, they will not receive pay. So we are in a true, we believe, are essentially being laid off. We have people laid off. And we have people that are being required to work with no pay.
The mindset of the workers. You just heard Donald Trump talking about this thing could last a year, and it's almost it's almost like a political volleyball. It's almost like you're being held hostage for a wall. What's the mindset here with your organization and the workers?
Well, I think they're. I think he's very. He's used to the private sector. He's used to shutting down a casino and walking away and going into bankruptcy. We have, for instance, in Pennsylvania, 9 federal prisons. Those guys are all working, and I say guys as a. There are women and men working in that prison. Those 9 prisons, every single day, 24 hours, 7 days a week. We have TSA agents on the line working every day at those checkpoints processing passengers. ICE agents in Pennsylvania and Delaware. These people are all going to work right now. They're required to be there with no pay. I don't know about, none of them have the resources that Mr. Trump was left by his father. So I don't know how they're going to keep going to work at this at a federal prison or at a TSA point or anywhere else. If you keep this going for a month or 2 months, you're going to have a bunch of people leave to go get other jobs to make money. And they're not going to show up. And I don't know how you're going to run a prison, a TSA checkpoint, an ICE local. I don't know how you're going to do those things without having people there getting paid. You have to come to work. You got to put gas in your car. You have to feed yourself and your kids and your family. So, this guy is not dealing with reality. The people supporting him are not dealing with reality as far as we're concerned.
Phil, Chris Woods, Hospital Workers Union, all of those jobs that you just mentioned are really important jobs and a lot of jobs that we appreciate all the hard work that those men and women do. What can we do from the labor perspective in terms of solidarity to help support you guys through this shutdown? What can we do?
Well, we're trying to pressure, frankly, right now we're pressuring congressmen and senators to vote to open the government over Mr. Trump's objections. Especially in Pennsylvania, we need Senator Toomey to get a lot of pressure. I sent him correspondence yesterday. I received correspondence back last night. He believes there is some deal that can be made, but our deal is this. The House has already voted. There's a bill, H.R. 21. They put 6 appropriation bills into that bill that had previously been passed by the Senate, and the majority leader now says he won't bring them up. So we are trying to get Republicans like Mr. Toomey to understand that this is harming the state economy. There's about 12,000 to 15,000 federal workers that are not getting paychecks, and that translates into economic problems in these small towns and places that those workers live. So we're asking everybody to contact Senator Toomey's office and get him to ask McConnell to open up this government. The other thing we're doing on Tuesday, this coming Tuesday, which is the 7th, at 10:30 at Independence Park, at the People's Area, where you can do open, you can do rallies. We're going to have a rally there. We've notified the Philadelphia AFL-CIO. They're going to be putting out some information. Our union will be there. I think NTU's coming, and Congressman Evans and Congressman Boyle are going to be there to show their support to federal workers. So we're trying to kind of generate some public sympathy for the guys and women that are working without pay, and also our furloughed workers. We have people that we have about 400,000 people who were sent home, basically locked out of their jobs, told not to come to work. They're probably going to be out filing for unemployment, which is going to bog down the state system. And so you've got all these people in Pennsylvania and Delaware, where that I represent, who will be going on unemployment. Well, that's not, they just put out a big jobs report. Well, you just laid off 800,000 federal workers. So you just changed your whole job report for January. Phil, and that's how we're looking at it.
Phil Glover is our guest here on Saturday Night Live with Philly Labor as we broadcast to you on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT. Philip is the National Vice President of the American Federation of Government Employees, District Number 3, finding himself in all of his workers and the reference to 800,000 workers in somewhat of a box with Phil perhaps no option at all until this shutdown comes to closure. Is that your belief?
Yes. I mean, essentially, we are the bargaining chip, the way this is coming out. Look, for 2 years, the Republican Party controlled the House, the Senate, and the White House of this country. Mr. Trump ran on a platform of building this beautiful, big, huge wall, whatever his vision of it was. That has changed dramatically over the last few weeks. But, you know, he ran on this 2 years ago, 3 years ago. He had plenty of time to get the Republican Party in the House and Senate to force this issue. Our understanding is he didn't even put this wall in his budget, in the White House proposed budget, the last 2 years. Now he loses the midterms. We have the Democratic Party coming in to be in the majority in the House, and all of a sudden this becomes a crisis. It's an emergency. We have to shut down. Now he's talking about calling a national emergency and just spending whatever money he wants like a dictator. I don't think, you know, people need to understand what this guy is talking about here. He is talking about going around the will of Congress, going around elected representatives who are supposed to appropriate money for things and dictate what he wants to spend money on. That has never been the case in this government. And it's a problem, and I hope our you know, people listening understand how far this is starting to go with this guy. You know, both houses can override a veto by 2/3, and we are hoping that, you know, at some point the House, the Senate is going to get enough noise from people out here in the country, these federal workers and their families, that they will do that. They will pass a funding bill and they'll override him. That's what needs to happen.
Phil, let me ask you just to follow up and give a quick answer. There's going to be a lot of people that are listening to this radio program here on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT, and they're going to say, hey, why not fund the wall? The wall is going to create union jobs. The wall is going to create an opportunity for government employees to make more money, and that's going to be the pushback from people listening on this radio station. How do you answer it?
Well, how I answer it is this. There are ways, again, as I mentioned, for 2 years this could have been done through regular order. This should have been done through the Homeland Security Committee. There should have been an appropriation bill should be passed to fund the wall. There have been start and stops to this. I'm trying to be quick because I know we run out of time, but there have been start and stops to this and having deals made on a total immigration reform package. There are a lot of immigration issues. Both Democrats and Republicans have voted for that, for comprehensive immigration. Putting up a big solid wall is not reform. And frankly, there are places on the Southwest border that you can't build these things, and they've never had them. The terrain, you're talking about taking people's land. You're talking about cutting off water access to farmers and ranchers down there. And if you look at what happened in the midterms, all along Texas and New Mexico, those congressional seats along that border flipped blue. They flipped the Democrats. Now, if that caravan was such a scary thing for all these people, why would they have voted to change parties along that border?
Phil Glover.
Phil
Glover joining us here. Phil, I didn't mean to cut you off there. We're just up against the clock. Real quick, before we let you go, the event is Tuesday the 7th, right? Give me the details, time, location, again.
Yeah, 10:30. It's at the Independence Park. They're near the Liberty Bell. There's an area there called the People's Area that you can have rallies. We're going to be there. Congressman Evans and Congressman Boyle are going to attend. We've put invitations in to both senators, and we will have people there from that are furloughed, and we will have union officials there to speak and to get our message out at that point.
And is that's Monday, right?
Tuesday.
Okay, so that will be Tuesday. Phil Glover, our guest here tonight on Saturday Night Live with Philly Labor. Phil, thank you so much. Continued support as you work through this struggle for on behalf of all your workers.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
All right.
Thank you, Phil.
Thanks, Phil.
And as Chris Wood said, what can we do here on Saturday Night Live with Philly Labor? What can the labor community do here in Pennsylvania? Chris, I'm sure you'll jump in to that as we roll along. We'll take a commercial break here on Talk Radio 1210, WPHT, Saturday Night Live. Back in a moment. Back here live on Saturday Night Live with Philly Labor on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT. Special thanks to Philip Glover, who joined us in the opening segment. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, 7:35, Maureen May, who's the president of PASNAP, will be with us, and we'll get into a good deep conversation with Chris and Jay Dock and Maureen, and we'll center most of our focus on that conversation about the rally, but we'll explain that, Jay Dock and Chris, at 7:35. One reference to our special guest in the studio tonight, we welcome Matthew Walsh, who is joining us. Matthew, welcome to you, and George Walsh, your father, was kind enough to bring you in here tonight, so welcome into Matthew and George. George with the United Steelworkers. So nice to have both in the studio.
Absolutely. And so we just talked to Phil Glover about what's going on with the furloughed workers and with the shutdown, and one surefire way of making sure that doesn't happen again is in the voting booth. And so I'm ecstatic to bring on to the program Bob Wolper, who is the Vice President of Strategic Communications, a Delaware Valley-based PR firm that does that has clients in the union community from DC 33 and Pete Matthews, the UFCW 1776, and Wendell Young, just to name a few. Bob, welcome to the broadcast.
Happy New Year, guys.
Happy New Year to you, my friend. You just had a an op-ed piece published yesterday in the Allentown publication, The Morning Call. So, mm-hmm. And it's the headline was Democrats Should Run in Teams in 2020. Describe what you meant by that.
I've been looking at the field as it's shaping up for all the Democrats running for president, and it just occurred to me that it's not very efficient to have 20 or 30 people running against each other in a primary, and we should change the paradigm of the way the elections are. Because we have, frankly, we have an embarrassment of riches. We have too many good candidates that are lining up for that. And, you know, I came at it from a perspective of coming out of the union movement where there's limited resources. And, you know, you try to do the most you can with the resources that you have. So I was looking at some of the people that are being talked about for running. And, you know, I've been doing campaigns for going on 40 years, and I thought, you know, the Democrats would be better to refocus the entire primary process by teaming up with each other and combining their respective strengths. And that could be, you know, higher name recognition and more experience with somebody who has a higher degree of fundraising capability. And they could run as teams and winnow down the field, and it would show the country that Democrats have the ability to, you know, come together before a primary. And, you know, if you look at some of the people that are running and you look at the attributes that people are talking about that a presidential candidate needs, well, a vice presidential candidate needs the same thing. Now, we don't vote for vice presidential candidates, but if somebody is running for president, and they linked up with somebody who was thinking about running for president, or, you know, is not getting anywhere but has a lot of potential, a lot to offer the country, my thought is that they'd be better off running as a team so that, you know, people could say, all right, say it's Joe Biden and Julian Castro, or Joe Biden and Amy Klobuchar, or whoever. The combination there would force the national discussion back to the issues that those respective teams are running on. So you could have good candidates who have similar issue bases combined together to make it that much stronger, take the focus away from the horse race and the personality contests and all the conflict that comes with the kind of coverage that a huge field of candidates would get.
Bob, do you think that the party would have the open-mindedness to do something like that?
I think that the party itself is it's geared to come to consensus. I think the fact that you have an artificial deadline of all these primaries, and that's how you sort it out, who can raise the most money, and that's how you winnow out the field, that to me seems to be a waste of resources. If I was somebody who was, in the top tier of the candidates, I'd be talking to some of the other ones and figuring out which one would be the best combination. If that person still wanted to run for president, that's fine. But if I was that candidate, I'd say, hey, I'm running for president myself, but I also, if I win the nomination, I want this person as my vice president. So you could have people thinking about what is the best combination of candidates to win the presidency, because the presidency is not going to be just, a candidate to beat Donald Trump. Personally, I don't think he's going to be there. And if there's any justice in this world, he won't be running for president, because he'll be running for, the shop steward of C Block in some prison somewhere. But, running for the job itself, you have to present to the American people the best vision for the kinds of issues that would bring back the middle class and help people down to the grassroots level.
Bob. Go ahead, Bob.
So that was what drove my thought process on the op-ed.
What's your thoughts around this idea and voter turnout? How would this idea of teaming up? Because I think, that's one of the things we've stressed, not only on this show, as we talked about the midterms, and as we talk about 2020, is the voter turnout. What is your thoughts around how would we get the voters to actually turn out around this possible idea of teaming up from a Democratic perspective?
Well, when you are an individual candidate and you're trying to boost turnout for yourself, you're trying to subtract from other candidates. And if you have a team that's running, you're doing a combination. So you're spreading out your ability to turn out. So somebody may be turning out for this candidate, not because that candidate's their first choice. Their first choice might be the candidate who doesn't have a chance to win, but this candidate wants to run with them.
And you're almost combining resources. At the same time, though, it's almost like some unions run on slates. Okay. Mm-hmm. And you're combining resources. You certainly would. It almost have to be, it'd be very unique. But I do think that using Donald Trump as an example, I think that you're going to see a lot of changes in presidential elections. I mean, one of the things that gets in the middle of this, a wild card, would be if a non-political candidate would run again. So say, for example, Oprah Winfrey, if she decided to run for president, it would be she'd have to make that decision on her own whether she wanted to do that or not. But it's definitely interesting, and I think that I think it's outside the box thinking, and of course it would have to be accepted by the party. But we appreciate the op-ed, Bob. I really enjoyed the piece, and I like the outside the box thinking, because for crying out loud, we can't let this happen again. We have about
that's the other thing, Joe, is coming at it from coming out of the labor movement. We're practical. Everybody in labor was practical. How do you get something done? What's the most efficient, cost effective way of getting something done? And if you apply that kind of logic to the political side, there's no reason for unions to be all split up, back in different candidates, where if unions said, hey, we want, you candidates to think about combining to get the best team to run, it also becomes more efficient for our political arms and all the different unions.
And that's true, but also there's a lot of other special interests that, you know, it would create an interesting dynamic because, as you know, fundraising is a big part of that process. And so when you're picking candidates, it's an interesting thing. But, Bob, listen, we want to thank you for joining us here tonight, and we really appreciate the op-ed. It was some good reading.
Yeah.
Thanks, Bob.
Yeah, happy to be there. You know, just call me anytime.
You got it.
Good stuff from Bob Wolper joining us here on Saturday Night Live with Philly Labor. Nice to have him back in the rotation on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT. We'll get to a commercial break when we come back. After the commercial break, as promised, Maureen May, president of PASNAP. We'll talk about the rally that was held on Thursday. Back in a moment. And back here on Saturday Night Live with Philly Labor here on Talk Radio 1210, WPHT. Coming up at the top of the hour, Dan Gaffney will be along from 8 to 11 p.m. right here on Talk Radio 1210, WPHT. Dan will take you into the night here on a Saturday night in the Delaware Valley. J-Doc?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of things going on. Obviously, it's a new year, but it also new challenges. And so I'm happy to bring into the program Maureen May, who's the new president of PASNAP, the Pennsylvania Association of Staff Nurses and Allied Professionals. And we're going to talk to Maureen about a rally and a lot of things that are going on there. Maureen, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
It's great to have you. There was a big rally in the city on Thursday. The mayor was there. Pat Otting was there. A lot of support. If you will, please tell our listeners what that was about.
Well, first I'll tell you who I am. I am the president of PASNAP, and that started in July, but I am also a registered nurse for 35 years at the bedside. I'm a direct caregiver. And why we went out to an informational picket on the Thursday is because we needed to tell the public and get the support of our legislators and inform Joel Freeman and the AHHS Corporation that staffing, safe staffing, is the number one issue for bedside nurses. And that is on the table now. And what we had to do was go out to let the public know and to inform anybody that will hear us is that we are nurses, we advocate for patients, and this is one of the final pieces of our contract that we think is the most important piece, and we want safe staffing guidelines and grids in our contracts. And that would be St. Christopher's Hospital for Children and Hahnemann Hospital. We had several hundred nurses on the picket line. And as you said, we were very happy to have lots of support. Tina Tartaglione, Senator Tartaglione. We also had Senator Farnese. We had, like you said, the mayor was there, Angel Cruz, Maria Quinones Sanchez, Mark Squillo, Brian Sims. We've had a lot of support from our legislators, and we need that support. This is an issue that affects everybody. And so the Hahnemann nurses and the St. Christopher nurses made the decision after 5 months of negotiations to let the public know and to have a great rally in support of nurse to safe patient limits and safe patient care. And that's really what this is about. And every nurse in the city and anybody that is a nurse that cares for patients, this is their number one issue.
Maureen, welcome. This is Chris Woods. I'm Executive Vice President of District 1199C. First off, congratulations on your new position as president. I wish you well in that role. You guys are at the table currently with the hospital and their administration. When you talk about staffing and safety issues, what is the pushback that this employer is giving you guys back across the table that is leading to you guys having to go out and do these informational pickings? What is you would think, and I've been in your position a lot of times where you're bargaining for things that you would just think would be tentatively agreed to in one session. And so what is the feedback and the pushback that you guys, you said you've been in bargaining for 5 months. So just speak to us a little bit about what's going on there and what you're getting back.
So the pushback came towards the end. And the 5 months, there was a real, collaborative effort to make sure that we had what they call grids, which identifies the number, the minimal number of patients a nurse, a registered nurse, should have to the patient. And St. Chris Hospital for Children, they have, there's different floors that have different needs. If you're in a higher acuity or an intensive care unit, obviously the limit, you're going to have less patients because of how the care is given and how critical a patient could be. So it was a very thoughtful, long discussion, and it went back and forth with the engagement of the chief nursing officer and the administrative people. And at every session, there was a discussion what best would fit the safety for these patients. And we were able to come to an agreement on actual grids that we want in the contract because they're enforceable. So what happened towards the end, and it had some language around it that made it enforceable and worthwhile, and we knew that this language would ensure the safety. At the end, they pulled back on the grids, and they kind of made a decision that that the grids are no longer, they had agreed to the grids, by the way, but they then pulled back, and they basically said, well, we think that you have to take less of an increase in your salary, and you have to make a choice now. Now that we've decided that these grids are good, we're gonna not provide you with some of the benefits that we have already looked at. So that's the pushback. And the number one issue for any nurse at any bedside is having the right complement of patients for the care that they need. It's fundamental. There's plenty of studies out there. They know that. It's about having enforceable language in a contract that says that the administration has to provide this. And I think that's the reason is they don't want enforceable language, which is what we need. Any patient would want a nurse to have the proper complement of patients to what her ability is to care for her patients. And not only that, we looked at even patient care assistance. We looked at every aspect. So those 5 months was a really thoughtful, collaborative effort with the chief nursing officer, with the administration, saying these are great grids, and we believe we can do this. And then at the end, they just backed off, and we're not going to back down on this. This is the number one issue for our nurses.
So as you know, Maureen, you know, we represent at both of those institutions the non-professional employees within our union, District 1199C. So
yep.
Anything we could do to be helpful, don't hesitate to reach out. We'll try to support you guys in any way that we can to support your collective bargaining process and your efforts to get a contract. So tell us the next steps now. You guys had this incredible rally. It sounds like you got a lot of political support from the folks that you mentioned who was there. What's our next steps, and how can we be helpful?
Well, our next steps is obviously to continue to educate the public on the importance of these safe staffing limits. You realize that, especially with St. Christopher, there's economic and public health inequalities, and that also impacts what the needs are. There's higher morbidity and mortality, and so we're looking. These are the main issues. Is that we also have an underserved population, which requires to have more time with patients. What can you do? You can always support us. The rally, we're going to continue bargaining. We're hoping that we are able to schedule another session and come back to the table and make the difference. And as you know, Chris, that Hahnemann and St. Chris were recently purchased by a for-profit from Tenet, and they were also for-profit. So we can't look at the profits. As direct caregivers, we can't look at the profits. We can only look at the patients. They're not a bottom line for us, and they're not a line item in a budget.
Maureen, before we go to break, because we're going to,
where's the common sense?
Well, that's what I was just going to say, Joe. I mean, it sounds to anybody listening, when you listen to some of these terms, don't mistake this when I'm listening to the general public. This is about patient safety. These are nurses that are fighting on behalf of the patients that they're serving. And talking about, you know, we talk about safe patient limits. Basically, you know, in layman's terms, you're talking about one nurse for so many people. Could you imagine, you know, you said St. Christopher's for children, right? Or Hahnemann. Yeah, you're talking about kids that are that are in need of the most important thing of, you know, of any hospital is the nursing care. They basically, you know, I mean, they're the ones that are with the patients all the time. The doctor may come in, they're great, a big part of it. But the point is, I myself was in critical condition and left one hospital to go to the other one for nursing care. Now, you're going to tell me that we're talking about profits over patients right now. Imagine going in an ambulance, you got one place to go, and there's a picket line outside. It's infuriating.
These ratios make all the difference in the world.
In the world.
We represent 20,000 registered nurses in California. It's one of my biggest affiliates, UNAC. And I mean, when you look at the contract and you look at the language, but when you actually hit the floor and you actually, as you just mentioned, are in a hospital or healthcare facility, it makes all the difference in the world in terms of the quality of care that a patient can receive. And you would think that most employers, right? Because I always tell people this across the table. These are your employees first. Before we get to the union hat, these are your employees. You have to look at it that way. You cannot put people in unsafe conditions, whether it's the nurse or whether it's the patient. And so I think sometimes our employers just forget about those things, but we're there to help any way we can to help remind them, Maureen. So whatever you need, again, just reach out, and 1199 will be there to support you guys.
Maureen May is joining us here. We're going to ask you, Maureen, to hold over while we get to a commercial break, and we'll bring Maureen back on the other side of our commercial break here on Saturday Night Live with Philly Labor on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT. Perhaps a course in common sense is coming up next. Back in a moment. And back here on Saturday Night Live with Philly Labor as we come to you from around the Delaware Valley here on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT, along with Chris Woods and Jay Dock. I'm Joe Krause, coming to you on a Saturday night. And as I said, when we first came on the share or on the show and we opened up the show, still okay to say Happy New Year. So I say Happy New Year to all the listeners around the Delaware Valley.
Absolutely, Joe. So we're talking to Maureen May, who's the president of PASNAP. And Maureen, in our conversation earlier today, you talked about the owner of the company and management being so so not wanting to put these terms in the contract that they're actually trying to, have a trade-off where they'll provide, pay incentives not to have those terms in there. Why is that?
There's a certain level of control over taking care of patients, and that's why. I'll just give you an example. At one of the negotiations, because I've been sitting in on the negotiations, I also work at the bedside as well. I still work full-time. At the negotiations, one of the comments was made by the other side that having a charge nurse with a limited assignment is a luxury. And so when we hear those type of comments, we don't think that it's a luxury to have good care. In fact, we take an oath to do the right thing and to pledge to do everything to raise the standards of nursing. And so that's why we don't understand. We sit there and we scratch our heads because we know what is important. We know that there are studies. And actually, this is a hedge fund. This is a for-profit hedge fund manager that comes in. And so there is a trade-off. As you said, the trade-off is that, you know, you have to, if you're managing a hedge fund, you have to make money. But how do you make that money? And we don't really want to see money being made off of patient care that is not good for the patient.
Who's the owner again, if you
will? So his name is Joel Friedman. And the company that came in originally was Paladin, and they changed the name to American, it's AAHS, which is American Academic Hospital System. And I want to just point out, though, there have been some good things that have come along in the negotiations. We've had some great discussions, and we've had there has been some effort to move us to a safer place with our patients. And we're happy to say that such things that we wanted to put in the contract was having the proper supplies with staffing. We want the tools and the manpower to make the patients safe. And that's really the number one. And I'm going to tell you, PASNAP had done a survey, and we had 30,000 nurses respond, and over 55% staffing was always inadequate. And 63% said that they were dissatisfied with their job. And they just, nurses just know they're there on the front line. And again, like I said, these are 1,400 nurses at St. Christopher's Hospital for Children and Hahnemann Hospitals that we're negotiating for. And they are going to be steadfast in making sure that the patients get the care. We are a patient advocate. The only voice a patient has when they're in that bed is us. And so that's how we do it.
Who advises the owner? Who's the nursing professionals that they have that are, because like you mentioned earlier, the data's there. The nurses have been surveyed, but the data's there on what in specific areas, sure, on what's safe, what's a safe patient limit. Who's advising these owners to leave it short, number one? And is the owner letting the general public know what's going on there, that they're choosing profits over patients?
Well, we work in a healthcare system in this country where profits are over patients. So maybe they're being biased by patients being a commodity, and to try to make, you have to make a profit in their eyes. And we have to take care of patients, and there's the divide for us. And there's plenty of studies. And we know that every additional patient that a nurse is assigned to, can increase the risk of hospital-acquired infections and just medical complications. There's so many studies out there. And for nurses, they can look at these studies and embrace them, but they know fundamentally and intuitively that they are doing whether they're doing the right or wrong thing. Well, and that's the challenge.
Maureen, listen, we want to thank you. First of all, what can people do real quick?
What they could do is call Joel Freeman, and they can also log on to our website to see what we're doing. As far as Facebook, they can support us in our next rally. They can call Joel Freeman or write a letter to him, and also our legislators. We're going to try to work with the legislators to sit back down again and make this happen.
Well, and the website is PASNAP.com, PASNAP.com. Maureen May, president of PASNAP, thanks so much for being our guest, and you have our support.
Maureen, thanks again. This is Chris.
Thank you, Chris.
Whatever we could do to be helpful, we just came out of bargaining this past year with those guys. I know Joel. I know John DeNome. I know all of those guys over there. So whatever we could do to be helpful in trying to help you guys reach an agreement or just support the nurses at both hospitals, just let us know.
We will. Thank you, Chris.
Maureen May joining us as our special guest here on Saturday Night Live with Philly Labor. Chris, I want to come to you quickly just to get just to follow up on that. My confusion as I listened to Maureen explain some of the scenario is why there are not more unions in hospitals, because I think it's the one protection for nurses that they need. So I'll come to you the last word on that, and then I'm going to come to our guest to sign us off the air.
A lot of the employers start at the top with the nurses, and they make it a part of their curriculum as they bring you through as a new employee, that you just cannot be a part of the union. And I think they're attaching it to, most of the time you have the nurses whose salaries throughout most of the classifications are high, and they don't want to see that add to their line. And the question that Joe talked about is that's really what's driving. This is common sense. Why would you not want to deliver quality of care on both sides of the issue, whether it's the nurse or whether it's the patient? And especially when you're talking about a children's hospital like a St. Chris, those are the most vulnerable patients that you could have. And so we got to do a better job of just educating and continue to fight for these workers who are not represented. And these kind of movements that PASNAP is going through is what allows for the conversation to be a little bit easier when you get to some of those non-union facilities.
J-Doc, I'll give you 30 seconds to react to that.
No, I completely agree. I don't think that people understand, anybody out there is thinking that this is just a labor dispute. This is not a labor dispute. This is a dispute over the care of patients. Imagine your child is in that hospital and you can't, and they're in pain or they're suffering, and you can't get somebody in that room because they're attending to somebody else because they're overloaded. Definitely go to the website, PASNAP.com, call your legislator, The last thing you want is to go to a care, a facility, and not have enough support.
And the last thing we'll do before we say goodnight here on Saturday Night Live with Philly Labor is we'll ask our special guest in studio, Matt Walsh, who was part of the broadcast tonight. You didn't hear him throughout the hour, but we'll give him a chance to at least comment about your first experience here in the studio at 1210. Certainly not your first experience in the studio, but your first with us joining us here on Saturday Night Live.
I want to thank you guys for giving me the opportunity to sit in on the show today. I actually went to school. I went to Kutztown University of Pennsylvania, and I was part of the radio club, KUR, for almost 2 years there. So I'm no stranger to being in front of the mic, but it was a great opportunity for me to kind of refresh my memory a little bit and also to learn something new, learn about important issues that people don't realize affect our everyday lives. So once again, I wanted to thank you guys for bringing me on tonight.
Well done and well said,
awesome.
And you're certainly welcome back.
Glad to have
studio.
You, Maddox, for coming.
Whenever you would like to come in, as long as George is willing to drive you in, right? George, good stuff. That's going to do it tonight for Saturday Night Live with Philly Labor here on Talk Radio 1210, WPHT. Special thanks to Philip Glover, who kicked off the show. Bob Wolpert was along, and then Maureen May finished it up in the final half hour. And so nice to have the Vice President and Executive Director of 1199C back in the big chair, Chris Woods. Nice to have you. Happy New Year. May your travels be few over the next couple of months as we roll along here on a Saturday night. That's going to do it for us here on Saturday Night Live with Philly Labor. On behalf of J-Doc, on behalf of Matthew for joining us, and your father, George, and of course, our gracious host, Chris Woods. I'm Joe Krause. See you next time, everybody.
This program is a paid commercial announcement and in no way represents the views of WPHT or its management.